This episode of the Mickey Mouse Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. And when it's time to book your vacation, then it's time to look up the vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They'll do the best job that anybody could possibly do, and they'll get the most out of your vacation dollar for you. So visit them at meitravel.com and mousefantravel.com, or you could click on their banner at the MickeyMousePodcast.com webpage.
This is Mike Rallman from the Be Our Guest podcast at Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party. You're listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast. Yeah!
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 109 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. This is being recorded at Epcot at the World Showcase during the 2013 International Food and Wine Festival. It is the day following the 2013 Twilight Zone Tower of Terror 10-miler. I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Scribner-McLean, and we're going to chat a little bit about what's been going on this weekend, what we've noticed, and a few other things. So, Michelle, where do you think we should start? Probably with the expo?
Sure, that sounds like a good place to start. How are you doing today, Mike, the day after the race? Any aches and pains?
Well, I got to say that 10 miles is... it's not 10 miles is not just 10 miles, but 10 miles shouldn't be laborious as it is sometimes with the night races, and I think it has a lot to do with the time of the race and, of course, the weather. It was not as warm as last year, but it certainly was warm.
Sure. I wanted to say, too, that we are going to have another show. We're going to have our guests, Mike and Melissa, back to talk a little bit more about this race compared to last year's race, but we thought it would be good to just kind of have a chat while we had some things on our mind. And before we go any further, Mike, I have a shout out.
Okay.
And it is to Kelly Orr. And we asked folks to, Mike was wearing his Boston Red Sox shirt. We had folks come up and say, "Go Sox, go Red Sox." And Kelly was the first one. We met her going on the bus from Port Orleans over to the race start area. And so Kelly, yay! She said it. We appreciate it. It was nice to meet her.
Thanks, Kelly. We were in the first seat in the bus, and she said hi. So, Michelle, let's talk a little bit about the expo. We did something different this time around than we have done in the past, and that is on the we went to the expo and picked up our bibs the day before the race, and then on the day of the race, we actually, which was yesterday, midday, we decided to go back to the expo to see how it was, and we found it to be so much more tame, fewer people, really gave us a chance to really take our time and actually lay low before the nighttime race. And I think that's something that, you know, some people may think about doing in the future.
Well, the expo opened at noon on Thursday, and we were there pretty much at noon. One of the things I noticed right away was that, you know, it is a smaller race, and the parking was a lot easier. And everything happened in the Jostin Center, right? That's the center. So we didn't go to the Milk House at all. So you picked up your race bib and then your shirt all in the Jostin Center. And all in all, even though that first day was a little crazier, the expo was a lot more calm. There were a lot fewer vendors, but it was kind of easier to walk around. Do you agree?
I agree. And do we know roughly how many people ran last night?
I think it was about 14,000 that the bibs went up to. So
yeah, so that made a difference too. Yeah. There weren't a million people like you would find in January, so that had a lot to do with it too.
I noticed that the merchandise area, when you walked in, the merchandise area was down right below you, and the line, there was a pretty big queue. the second day we went back, I bought something small. I walked right up to the front. There were many cashiers waiting to help me. One of the things that I found out about the merchandise, Mike, that I didn't know before, is that you actually get a discount if you are an annual pass holder or Disney Vacation Club member. And I probably spent more money in the past than I needed to because I didn't remember that. But I thought, on the whole, it was really nice. One of the things that I noticed that I think this is kind of a new thing that they started at Disneyland, is that there's a dedicated area to change your shirt size, your shirt if you don't have the right size. And that went off without a hitch. That was really, really easy. Sounds like we have some fans here in the background.
Yeah. Yes.
So what did you think about the number of vendors?
I think that it was interesting that, first off, I noticed right off the bat that because of the size of the race, this is one of those, I believe this race and probably Expedition Everest, where you won't find one particular vendor, and that is Track Shack. Track Shack was not there. Fit to Run was there, and they had, that's a running store in the Florida area, and they were there selling, and most of the normal vendors were there, but it wasn't overdone. You know, you had the Sweaty Band, you had the Fitletics, which used to be iFitness, you had the Snug Buds, you had most of what you would normally see, but it wasn't overrun, and it was, you know, it was nice, it was pleasant, especially after what we saw in Disneyland.
Yeah, I saw Running Skirts was there, a lot of the places that sell, like, the blinky light stuff, which is good for the nighttime races. The Stick was there. I saw just different fitness companies, but I also saw Hoka's were there. There was a place to try on Hoka One One's too. But you know, I thought overall it was very calm. But we have a new strategy. I think we talked about doing this for Wine and Dine. Do you want to share what we think we're going to do in terms of packet pickup for Wine and Dine?
Well, I think I sort of alluded to it earlier, and that is that since we're not doing the 5K for food and wine, and we're doing the half marathon at night, and we're going to be taking it easy that day of the half marathon, we've decided to do our packet pickup on the day of the race in the early afternoon and take it easy, stay out of the sun, and go to the expo then and have a nice lunch there. And rather than go through the hectic crowds that you'll see, and I would expect that those who opted not to go to this race, who are going to Food and Wine, are going to be there, which means I'm expecting it to be maybe 18 to 20,000.
Well, the thing, too, about when you go the day before, you're kind of dedicating that day to go to the expo, and then the next day you're going to be resting. So by going the day of the race, we have free up that whole other day before to go visit parks or do other things, too.
And that's what happened to us. So we did the not-so-scary Halloween party on Thursday night. So our only really chance to do Food and Wine was Friday after we had gone to the expo, and so we spent a lot of time at Food and Wine and tried a couple things, and thumbs up for the grapefruit beer for me. And on Saturday, we took it easy, and like I said, we went to the expo. And then, Michelle, we did something that we normally don't do. Instead of driving to the race, we took a bus, and it worked out pretty well, don't you think?
I think for this race, you have to really take a bus if you're on property. It's the only way to go. We got to Port Orleans, got to the place where they're picking people up right at 7 o'clock. There's a bus there. We jumped on the bus. We were pretty much, we stopped at a few places at Riverside, and we were there within a half an hour. It wasn't too bad at all. We noticed that when people were on the bus, people were trying to drive to the World of Sports, and they weren't letting people in. There were police cars there blocking people. So I think for this race, you have to take a bus. You really just have to take a bus.
I agree. I forgot to mention that at the expo, we did see Rudy. We talked to Rudy Novotny. We talked to Carissa Be Alert. We saw Jeff Galloway. We got a chance to talk with Jeff for a while, and his wife Barbara, who hopefully will be running in the Wine and Dine. Her foot is getting better. And we also saw Tara Guidus, who was on our show. We attended her talk, and she told me something that I wanted to know. I asked her before the talk about what I was taking for my electrolyte drink during my runs. And I said, Tara, do I shortchange myself if I am drinking Powerade Zero? And she said, yes. She said, well, if you're running, especially a long run, you need the sugar, you need the carbs. So for those of you who are doing diet sports drinks when you're running, no, you're not getting anything out of it. So go with the full-blown Gatorade or Powerade.
I just want to say, too, that I think for myself, sometimes I overlook those talks. And I found the Tara Guidus talk to be absolutely fascinating. She had a PowerPoint. She was talking all about one of the issues that runners have, which is that they can't seem to lose weight while they're running. She gave a fantastic presentation, and I was saying this morning to somebody at breakfast that it was the first time I've heard about diet and weight loss spoken about the way that she did, and it just made perfect sense. So hopefully we'll have her on the show so she can talk about that, because I know a lot of people are interested. But my point was that I think that you should go to those expo talks. They're really, really, I think they're worthwhile, and they're part of your race fee, so you can get a chance to ask experts those questions that you have. So take a look at, for Wine and Dine, take a look at who's coming and make a plan.
That's right. So let's get back to the race. What's nice about this race is that the corrals are right where the gathering area is, and so you don't have to walk a mile and a quarter to your corral like you have to do for the Princess, for the January races.
You don't have to walk a mile and a quarter to the corral, but you do have to walk a mile and a quarter to race start, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true. So let's talk about the race, Michelle. 10 miles. It starts at 10 o'clock at night. The weather was not quite as warm as last year, but it was still very warm. I don't think it was a difference of more than 5 degrees, and it really didn't make a difference to me. I felt very, very warm. The theming, I think that was on everybody's mind. The theming was very well done, very much Twilight Zone, a lot of special effects. Michelle, you want to mention some of the special effects?
Sure. Well, I think, too, one of the things that we should mention is they did the whole start of the race a little bit differently. Instead of opening up the corrals and letting, you know, just opening up the gates and letting people through as one corral went, they actually had many more corrals. It went up to G? H?
It went up to J.
J. J. Okay, it went up to J. The first few corrals had about 500, and then after about D, they had about 1,000 people in the corral. And what they did is you loaded into the corral right where the, you know, you got off the butt, you know, the race prep area. You stood there for a bit, and then they had volunteers with ribbons that they stood all across the road, and people in the corrals would line up behind the ribbons, and you would just walk up to race start. So that's how they managed it. They didn't have volunteers, you know, holding the gates for you. They had two or three volunteers near the people with the ribbons, and then when it was your start, they walked you right up to the front, and that was really interesting. Where I was, the sound system wasn't working. Was that the case where you were?
That's correct. Yeah. After corral, I went off, and I wasn't in corral aid this time. Corral, there were some issues, and we were wondering how they would set off the rest of the corrals if the PA system was not present.
Yeah. But I thought that the whole ribbon thing worked really well. Everybody was well-behaved. When it was time for us to start, I was actually right up at the front of my corral. They got rid of the ribbon. I saw race director John Hughes there telling people where to start right on the mat. And Rudy and Carissa were there, and they were in their Twilight Zone garb. And there were fireworks for every start. But the really cool thing, Mike, that I loved was that it wasn't 5 minutes in between each corral. It was 2 minutes. So you were moving a lot, and everything seemed to go off a lot more quickly.
Yeah, I like that idea too. It was it was kind of refreshing. The theme again was the Twilight Zone Tara Terra, and there was an interesting beginning of the race, because as you were going through the first mile, there was a lot of Twilight Zone images and sounds. And there was laser lights going on. We had like a laser show, a ceiling, and then we saw other things. And I know one thing particularly that Michelle liked was something from that made her think of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, well, I thought that overall, the theming, I thought Disney upped this, upped the stakes here, because the theming was a lot better than last year. I felt like there was so many more characters, so much more entertainment along the route. There was seemed to be always something coming up. There was one part where we were running. Mike, I don't know if you know where we were. I'm not really not good with figure out where we were. But we're going around a little like water holding area, a little pond, and there was a roadway around it. We went by this a few times, and there was a big burst of flames, like a flame ball that went up about every 30 seconds or so. And the way that I've been describing it is it reminded me of The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy went to see the wizard and, you know, this big puff of flame. It was just breathtaking. It was really, really neat. I thought it was really, really cool. And you could see it in the distance running up and you're thinking, what is that thing up there? But I thought there were a lot more characters. I thought the theming for the Twilight Zone was throughout the race, that there were all sorts of different Twilight Zone, you know, illusions throughout, and lots. You want to talk about how many villains we saw?
Oh, goodness. We saw Maleficent in her hideous garb and face. We saw Jafar. We saw Hades. We saw the hyenas from The Lion King. We saw
Pain and Panic.
Pain and Panic.
Jack Skellington, the Big Bad Wolf, who I don't see. I haven't seen very often.
Saw a couple of
the Gravediggers.
Gravediggers and the World of Sports. We also saw some kind of ghostly thing. Two couple of ghosts. They were puppet ghosts. I saw. Funny, there was something that I just don't understand. They had a replica of the Captain Nemo submarine from 20,000 Leagues, and I don't know what that was doing out there, but what the heck?
I don't know. There was a lot of, I don't know, I guess it's like carbon dioxide smoke everywhere with the lasers. That was, some places it was pretty intense. Like
they had foggers,
foggers, yeah. But I don't know, I thought I was very pleased. I thought that, you know, the weather was a key thing. I think that the humidity was a lot lower than last year. I saw a lot better manners out on the course, a lot fewer people. You know, there was one area going to the Wide World of Sports, that renowned path of, you know, the gravel path. That was really tight, and it's hard to have good manners when, you know, you can only walk four abreast or run four abreast. But overall, I thought we're going to talk about this when our guests return. We'll compare it to last year, but I thought it was really well done. The path area for me was better. I think you might disagree with this, but it seemed to be better packed down, fewer stones there, and a lot better lighting. There was one area that the lights went out, and I saw people using flashlights. But overall, I thought that was better, and I managed to actually run in that part. What do you think?
There are two things I wanted to point out to World of Sports. When you get to the World of Sports, it was probably the halfway mark. So I remember looking at my watch, and it was 5 miles. I don't like the gravel road, and I just don't like it. Number one, it reminded me of two friends of ours who had run and stepped on a rock and had broken a bone in their feet. And I'm thinking, and that was probably during the day. So I don't.
But there was a lot less gravel, don't you think?
It's not. That's not the case, Michelle. It's still uneven. Mm. It's very uneven. If you are running, and we talked with Eddie McCoy afterwards, he didn't run on his Hokas. He said if he had run on his Hokas, he would not have felt anything. But if you're running on any kind of regular shoes, you're going to feel a rock. And if it's, and I saw some rocks that could very easily lead to an ankle turn, and there were some little dinks in the road. So I walked the whole way, and I'm sure that had an impact on my time. So that was an issue that I had, and I'll always have that issue. Not only that, but when it's unlit, everybody who was with me at that time walked through. And so that, you know, obviously had an impact on their time. One of the things I did like, though, was at the main baseball stadium. And, Michelle, unfortunately, you didn't see this because it wasn't working. Let's see if I can describe it to our audience. If you've ever been to the main baseball field at World of Sports, that's where the Atlanta Braves has their spring training. It's a very nice field. So they carried the theme real well there. In short center field, there was a machine, and it looked like it was from some science fiction movie. Right?
It was a Van de Graaff generator.
But it wasn't. It looked a little bit different than what you'd normally see. So imagine a robotic arm, and at the end of the robotic arm, there's, what would you call that, like electricity coming out of it, Michelle?
Yeah, there's electricity.
Electricity bolt that was about 20 to 30 feet long, and it was zapping things in center field. And if you looked at center field, left field, right field, first base, shortstop, second base, third base, pitcher, I should say, catcher, umpire, and batter, all that was there were their uniforms laid out very, very neatly, as if they were zapped by this alien presence. And on the screen, there was a warning, there's an alien presence in the stadium. Please evacuate while you can. So that was, I thought that was a very nice touch.
They also had on the scoreboard, I don't know if you saw, the box score said 1-3-1, so 13.1. So I thought that was really cute. I don't know, and then there was, wasn't there a soundtrack going too? They said something about warning.
Yeah, I don't remember what that was.
And there were a lot of people cheering, too, in that stadium.
Yeah. When we got back to, let's talk about when we get back to the studios. Again, when we're approaching the studios, we're about 7 or 8 miles into the race. We then see that laser light ceiling, and that was pretty cool. I mean, it just was really, really, really neat. It was like running under, I don't know, running in a laser tunnel. So that was pretty cool. We ran through a costuming, I call it. We heard the Manhattan Transfer singing the Twilight Zone song. And then, of course, we finished the race. Now, Michelle, you finished before me, so you went over to, we wanted to check the bag check, see how it worked. And they changed it from last year. Do you want to explain what they did?
Yeah, I think they really listened to some of the feedback that people were giving about not wanting to go down the stairs of the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular after having run. So when you got out of, well, first of all, when you finished, there was a long walk. There was a huge hill to go up, and I heard people groaning. They had those things that now we're seeing at most of the Disney races when it's warm, those towels that they give out. And the volunteers were absolutely fantastic. I actually needed to stop for the first time at the medical tent and get some ice for my Achilles. And they were amazing. They just said, sit down, we'll wrap you up. And they just wrapped up my foot with tape and ice, and it was fantastic. But anyway, when you got out of that area, you could go down, what's the main street of Hollywood Studios?
It's Hollywood Boulevard.
Thank you. I always forget that. Hollywood Boulevard. Or they directed runners to go straight backstage. And when you did that and you took a right, you actually walked right onto the stage of the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular. So you never had to go up and down stairs. The bag pickup was a breeze, but I didn't do that last year. And one of the cool things was that you could take your picture on the stage of Indiana Jones, so it kind of made it worth it to check your bag. It went, I had my bag in 10 seconds. It was just really flawless. So that was great. Want to talk about the after party now?
Well, first, I think I need to make a public a thank you to Michelle for greeting me with a smile and a beer. So I really enjoyed cooling down.
They weren't giving that out at bag check, though.
They weren't giving that out at bag check. I think one thing we want to talk before I forget is we had a question, I believe, about the magic bands. And we actually ran with our magic bands on, hoping that we could buy something at the end of the race. And why don't you explain to everyone what happened?
So I don't know about anybody else, but after running 10 miles at night in the heat in Florida, I wanted to have a beer. So they had, because it was the villains mix, not the villains mix and mingle. What's the name of the party? The villains party?
Villains Bash.
Villains Bash,
like
thank you. So because it was a special event, in addition to the regular food areas, they had carts out where you could buy little snacks and you could buy drinks. So there are many, many of them. And I wanted a special type of beer, so I went up to one of these carts and I said, you know, I want this beer. And they said, okay, do you have your room key? And I said, no, I have my magic band. And they said, okay, well, do you have cash? And I said, no, I have my magic band. They said, do you have a credit card? I said, no, I ran only with my magic band, so I didn't have to worry about that stuff. They said, no, we don't take that here. So I had to get in the long food line to get Bud, which I don't really like. But it was. I thought we still have some things to work out because... I would guess that I'm not the only runner who decided just to run with their magic band, and I was out of luck. Maybe I should bring cash. One of our friends, Eve Vanderpool, made a good point. You know, what if for some reason I had to go off property if there was an emergency? I should probably have some ID or something like that. But anyway, it wasn't convenient, and it was kind of a pain. But
we are recommending that for the Food and Wine Half Marathon, Wine and Dine Half Marathon, that you do wear your bands, because I'm sure you'll be able to use them at more places here in Epcot after that race.
Well, I've been using my band all around Food and Wine, and it makes it easy. It makes it a little too easy because you're just walking around. I got my room bill today. It was really interesting to see all the different things, all the places that I had gone just using the band. But... you know, I don't know that I would do much differently. It was very convenient just to run with the band, other than the fact that I have my band, my Fitbit, and I had my my Garmin watch, too, so I felt like I had bracelets all over the place. But anyway, I think, for me, I stayed later at the party than I stayed last year. The line for Tower of Terror was, it was posted at 40 minutes at 1:30 in the morning. And we waited for about an hour for that, me and a whole bunch of people from Team All Ears. However, then we rode Toy Story Mania. What was the line for that, Mike?
That was about 10 minutes.
At 3:30 in the morning. So that's the key.
And as always, I let you beat me.
That's the key. If you go at 3:30 in the morning, you don't have to worry about the lines.
That's the recommendation. I'm going to tell Len to put that in touring plans. So overall, compared to last year, would you say that this year's race was better?
I would say yes. I mean, the weather is not something that Disney can control for, but I think if we went back and listened to one of our early shows, I think one of our early shows was about the Tower of Terror 10 Miler, and we looked at all the different things that we were worried about, I think it was a lot better. I really do. I think there was a lot more theming. I think that the bag check area was improved. The volunteers, as always, unbelievable, outstanding. They were absolutely great. I thought, you know, I was commenting to the cast members who were there when we were riding Toy Story Mania at 3:15 in the morning. Every one of them was friendly. It was could have been 9 o'clock in the morning. They were absolutely fantastic. So, you know, the medal's great. It's pretty much the same medal as last year, but that's okay. It's still a fantastic medal. I really liked this race. I liked it much, much better than last year. My time wasn't exactly what I wanted it to be, but I don't think it really can be in these hot conditions. So I thought it was great. I would definitely recommend it and do it again.
I think that it's a good race for someone who is training for their first half marathon. It's a good bridge. It's a good training run. If you've never done it before, it's almost like Not So Scary. I would say definitely give it a shot. And we have one more point for Michelle.
Well, I did make one mistake, and that was I'm not hungry after running, and about 3:30 in the morning I decided I was starving and I didn't want to have greasy food, and there are not a lot of vegetarian options at studios, so I decided to have popcorn, and that was a really big mistake. My stomach did not like that, so I think that you still have to be careful after running in hot conditions. I think I hydrated well, and I did my nutrition okay, but I would make another choice because I had such an awful stomach ache later.
Yeah, I think I did my job well. Obviously, I wanted to make sure I didn't get dehydrated, so I think I had a big bottle of Powerade before the race, and I had 4 12-ounce bottles of Powerade that I ran with. And at the end of the race, I drank 2 bottles of Powerade and a bottle of water. And I think I had 3 beers. So I stayed well. I also ate a banana, and I ate whatever I thought was good immediately following the race. I thought it was important to do that. And that's it. So for Michelle Scribner-McLean, This is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road. This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who not only bring you this podcast, but also bring you the best in service when it comes to planning your vacation, be it a Disney vacation or any other vacation for that matter. They are experts in all things Disney and can help you answer questions and can do the best for your vacation dollar. So visit them at MEI-travel.com. on mousefantravel.com, and if you didn't know it by now, you can also get to them by clicking on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.
So we did Not So Scary on Thursday night, and then we did our only really day to do Food and Wine after the we did go to the expo on Friday. We spent the majority of the day and the night in Epcot, and we were out late, and we didn't get a chance to follow the 5K, but from what we heard, it was a rousing success. The next thing we'd like to talk about is the actual experience we had doing the 10-mile. I think one of the first things I'd like to talk about... I'm going to hold off.